These are updates for April 24th, 2016. I'm Patrick Woodenover.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Parkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And a bit of housekeeping before we get started with the show proper. We do have a show. Yes, we have a show, and we're doing it right now.
That's been true for a while.
Yep. We got a Facebook page. Check us out on facebook.com/dayzerooupdate. Like us, share us, criticize us, whatever you want to do. We're good with that. We also, because Google Play Music actually finally launched their podcast section, we're now available there. So if you're an Android user and you want to listen to us on the go, we're there on the Play Music store. So check us out. We're going to be there. Hmm. Yep. They launched it in October, and apparently they just got around to turning it on now. So, yeah. Very nice, Google. Somebody's
lazy. A lot of things going on over there.
Yeah, they got lots of irons in the fire, I'd say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, with that out of the way, I guess we'll start with what we're playing this week, and not a whole lot in my neck of the woods. Basically, a little bit of Street Fighter V and a little bit more stories. Just saving myself up for Doom that launches in like 3 weeks. So, yeah,
that snuck up on us.
Yeah. It did.
Really snuck up on us.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's been my week. How about you, Pat?
Actually, for the first time since it launched, no Street Fighter V. Just kind of going easy on my hands for the time being. Playing some JRPGs, Final Fantasy IX, Trails SC. I've also been continuing my whole Magic the Gathering binge, which may not... it doesn't fall under what video games I'm playing, even though I've dabbled in a little bit of Magic Online. But it's been consistent enough to be noteworthy. So I definitely feel the need to include that in there.
Yeah.
It's been pretty good to me, too. I opened up a deck builder's toolkit just because there were a couple of commons and uncommons I was trying to get. For this mono white deck I've talked about on Let's Weekend I'm trying to build. Ended up pulling a third Ulamog without even trying. So broke even on that. So that was nice. How about you, Brandon?
Still playing Ratchet and Clank. At the moment I think about halfway through it. I want to say again, like I said, Friday, just because this is a tie-in, don't expect this game to be easy. Because, you know, it's not. It's just as challenging as your average Ratchet and Clank game is.
Yeah.
There's lots of crap coming at you and a lot of you going and dodging and strafing and all that. But,
good times.
Yep. Fantastic game. It's actually cheaper than most other PS4 games. It's only $40. And it's really the closest that Insomniac has ever come to making anything equivalent to an interactive Pixar movie. It's just as, you know, just with some small exceptions, it's almost to that degree.
Yeah.
Graphics-wise. Also, I've been, I went back playing Police Knots again. As I've said before, Police Knots, it's the sort of spiritual successor to Snatcher that, Kojima made back in the 90s. It's basically plays a lot like that, except, you know, instead it's more point and click oriented than Snatcher was, but it still has all the cinematic appeal and all of the great, you know, all that great stuff that you know comes with a Kojima game. Mm-hmm. All the movie references and the, you know, occasional shout outs to other Konami games, including ones he's worked on.
Yeah.
It's also the game where Meryl first showed up. Yes, I am talking about Meryl from Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
It's not the same
Meryl,
but it's her. It's basically her prototype version, I guess.
Yeah.
Is her last name Silverberg in that one?
I think it is.
That name has a significance across Konami in general.
Mm-hmm. She also has kind of, I don't want to call it 80s hair, but it's a lot curlier than the ones you see in the Metal Gear. Also, it's because, you know, it's a Kojima game, so there's a lot of fan service as well. Because it wouldn't be a Kojima game without it.
Yeah.
Also, one of the things about it that's really neat is that it takes the concept of space flight and space travel very seriously. It doesn't, instead of like, you know, where a lot of sci-fi games where they just sort of take space travel for granted, in this game, it's a pretty big deal. You know, there's things like, you know, time dilation is a thing, stuff like having to, you know, sort of the biological effects that happen to space travel, like sickness and radiation, stuff like that. Stuff like that in general. It takes it very seriously. It's a game I do recommend because it's a lot of, it's actually really good.
This is Pac-Man? The psychological thriller?
It's just kind of a shame that there's like there's almost no legal way to actually play this game.
Yeah, I had to play it on my emulator.
Yeah. It's like, you know, other than going on eBay and, you know, grabbing a copy for like
I ended up having to do the same thing with Snatcher. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad Kojima couldn't figure a way to get that in Snatcher out in some form.
Yeah.
I actually have a feeling that if he was somehow still with Konami now, it would actually be easier if he managed to port both of these games to like Steam. Because I think both of those games would do really well over there.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, those games came out and he ended up leaving that company before any of that came to pass. So
maybe we'll get Sony using their magic to get. Somehow get the license and then get Kojima's new studio working on that.
Yeah. Well, we know he's working on something now already. So
yeah.
And you never know, he might go back to the old adventure game stuff he used to do.
Yeah.
But that's what I've been doing. So what about you, Chris?
I am also playing Ratchet and Clank. I beat it and I started the challenge mode stuff. And really enjoying it. Played probably good third or so of the game so far. And the cool part of that sort of new game plus version of the game is that as you take out enemies without getting hit, your bolt multiplayer goes up. So it adds this new element of the game of trying to, you know, take out enemies and not get hit at all. So you can get a higher multiplier and then also rack up the bolts like crazy. Because there are lots of things to bust in the environment to earn some more bolts. So I've been getting to the I think it's Quadar, the planet where you get the jet stuff to start flying around and finding a couple of little islands that you can fly to that have like these spawning plants that just respawn enemies over and over again, just using my flamethrower to take them out. Sort of grind up my multiplier. And I do something stupid and blow it and mess all up. So, yeah, still really enjoying it. And I played around in the museum, which is not a ton there, but it's a lot of... they kind of put some of the models from this game and also from some of the past games. So they have some of the mechs and other vehicles, ships from the old games and some of these hangars. One has all the cutscenes in it, which and then has a couple of like Japanese commercials for the second game, where there's somehow this kid is hanging out with Ratchet and Clank in his bedroom, and he gets like this love letter from a girl. They're like, "We'll help you open it." They blow it up. And then the kid's crying at the end as he's reading the burnt note. And there's another one, same situation, but it's his like homework notebook or something like that. He can't get it open. They go like, "We'll open it," and they blow it up. So it's a couple of good things like that on there. But there's a lot of cool like fan art and concept art, posters for things that are all around that place. They actually have like a lot of the old character models and weapon models and ammo models from the first game hanging out there. So it's a lot of little cool stuff. And they have one of these in, I think, most of the games. When you go into like challenge mode, you open that up. So it's a pretty cool little thing that they have in there. I've also been playing a game called Loud on Planet X.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
Yes, it's a mix of Plants vs. Zombies and Petapon with a bunch of indie rock and hip-hop in it. The bands I know of, I've heard of before, that are on it, like Churches, Metric, Tegan and Sarah.
There's a lot of Canadian stuff on there. But...
yeah, I think it's mostly Canadian. Because the developers are from Canada, so they got...
I think Churches is Australian, aren't they?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they are. I haven't heard anybody outside of like really small musical circles around here mention Metric, so that's awesome.
Yeah, I know. They're on the Amplitude soundtrack.
Hmm.
And, yeah, so you kind of have this lane-based thing, so there's a little bit of like a Guitar Hero rock band Beatmania kind of thing going on. And you see these aliens moving down each of the lanes, and you hit the corresponding button. And I'm playing on PS4, so the way they do it is the top lane is R1, then triangle, then circle or square for the third lane, and X. So it's kind of just all natural right there on the right side of the controller. So you're watching as they go along, and based on how many eyes the alien has, that's how many hits it needs to take. So you're trying to essentially... tap to the rhythm. You'll see on the screen, like on the outside of the screen, is a blinking thing sort of showing you the beat, so if you lose it you can find a way to get back on beat.
Yeah,
that way. And there are lots of like little specials that kind of happen like a Mario Kart kind of thing. This meter fills up, you hold down either the triggers and then the lane button, you plant it. And there are different ones, and it's just kind of randomized. So far, I've been playing on easy just to sort of get the controls down and the pace and the tempo for the stuff. There are medium and hard versions of all the levels. And I think there's 14 bands, 2 songs each, so about 28 songs. I think there's like 1 or 2 ending songs. So I'm working my way through it and really enjoying it. There's a couple of hip-hop songs in there that are pretty cool, too. It works really well in this setup, and it just looks really good. It's pretty cheap. It's $7.99, I think $7.19 with PlayStation Plus. So really cheap, and a good way to get that sort of style of music game that we don't really get too often.
Yeah.
Especially hoping that we get like a Petapon 4 at some point.
Yeah.
And the other game I'm playing is Koi, which released on PS4 this week from a Chinese independent studio. This is the first Chinese PS4 game to get released in the West. And it was, I think, $10, but it's $6 with PlayStation Plus for launch. It's kind of a mix of Flow and Flower, where you play as a fish in like a koi pond. You go around and find these other colored fish, and you're just escorting them to another flower that's similar colored in that level, and sort of reuniting them with that. And then I found one of the later levels that adds this sort of like stealth element to it, where this is black fish that's swimming around, and you can see like a little vision cone in front of him. You're supposed to stay out of his way or else he'll attack you. Mm-hmm. And then I got all the fish that were right in that area to where they're supposed to go, and then all of a sudden this big white flower blooms and cures the fish, which had been supposedly contaminated by pollution. So now there's a sort of like saving these fish from this pollution element to it. It's kind of a neat little game. Look forward to playing more. It has a bunch of collectibles and stars and puzzle pieces. It seems to just tell you at the end, like, this is how many of each you got. And that's pretty much it for, like, judging you on how good or bad you did. So I didn't. I think I got attacked once by the blackfish. There was no real health bar anywhere. So it seems like a nice little relaxing game with a little bit of sort of Earth Day stuff kind of going for it. The other thing I've been playing is Pocket Card Jockey, which is a new game from Game Freak for the 3DS. It essentially combines horse racing with solitaire. In a very weird game that is a little too wordy. I'm playing the demo. It's all it's out right now. It comes out in a couple weeks. It's really wordy. That's the thing that's kind of turning me off a little bit, is they just keep talking. But you take on this rookie jockey that wants to ride a horse in the leagues that are going on there, and some sort of weird accident happens, and your guy gets killed by a horse, and in a weird way talks to an angel that brings him to life, but combines the act of horse racing with solitaire, because the jockey that you create is a solitaire fan. It's a really weird story to it. But essentially, each race is sort of broken up into a couple parts, and you play solitaire to start. You sort of play solitaire, and then you have these specific cards in these lanes. And you try and uncover the cards, and depending on which one you get like a better energy or something like that to start off better.
Yeah.
And then you go into like these specific sections of the race. So far it's been two or three for me, but I know that the game says like can be like up to four or five, I think. You try and mess with the solitaire in the first round, and it's a little bit different than normal solitaire in that you're not really picking off of a deck to see where you start. Like that first card you flip off the deck, it's not where you start. You sort of pick from the field first so you can start to try and get combos going right away if you want. Then you start picking off the deck for the rest of it. And as you complete that first puzzle, then it presents you with the ability to sort of try to position your horse among the field. So you're like drawing a little direction for your horse to go. And then you can sort of, what it has you is like rub this little icon to send all your remaining points to your energy. And that factors into like the last leg of the race where you're sort of doing like a dead heat sprint. And you're through that, when you let it go, you sort of see how your horse moves around and how the other horses are interacting. They can run into you and all this sort of stuff, knock you off course. And it's really interesting mix of these two styles that you wouldn't necessarily have thought about mixing at any point.
Yeah. I get the sense this is going to be one of those games that would probably play better in Japan than it does over here.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit.
Creativity is not dead, though.
Nope.
Definitely not. Especially when it comes to like solitaire stuff. I've seen a couple of solitaire games on Steam that people rave about that normally don't like solitaire games.
Yeah.
Which is... this seems like one of those sorts of games. I'm looking forward to seeing how the full game is. The demo's out now. Go check it out. It actually gives you like a couple hours of play. So far,
pretty beefy demo.
Yeah, the demo first starts you off with a pretty good horse. You can win a couple races pretty easy, and then you sort of get alerted that, his original jockey was injured. Now he's ready, so you're not gonna have this horse anymore. So then you get a new horse. It's like crappier stats, but they lower down the field to your level, and you get to name him. And I named mine Attacking Titans. It's not a very big space, but it was already something Titan. Like, well, Attack on Titan might be cool, and I just made it Attack Titans. Because horses always have dumb names and all that stuff.
That's true.
So yeah, that looks like it's going to be a pretty cool game, and it's cool to see Game Freak be able to get out of the Pokemon zone as often as they have been of late.
Yeah.
With, like, Harmonite and Tembo and all that. So, yeah, that's what I've been playing. How about you, Lee?
Keeping it simple. WoW. I've been doing some heroic raiding with the guild. I think I've talked about this before. That my wife and I found, or rather, it's really my wife found it. We've been having a great time. We got up to anybody that's following WoW, the last raid is Hellfire Citadel, and we got to Manoroth, which is the second to last boss. We had a heartbreaking wipe last night because we got him down to like 500,000 health. So he's basically at zero. He's got, for reference, he's got like 127 million on heroic. So we got him down to about, I think it was about 500,000. And, I don't know what happened. I don't know. He does this thing where you get kicked. Like, you're on this round platform, right? And the fight has four phases. And on the last one, you...
Oh, this is giving me some bad flashbacks.
Well, see, I'm a tank. So you drag him to the middle of the platform, right? And he does this thing where you have the tank switch where he just basically, like, slaps one of the tanks and you go flying, like, 50 feet across the platform. And when he hits you... He also drops these three waves that if you hit those after you land, will throw you again. So when you get swatted, the other thing that happens is like for DPS and healers and everything else like that, they really got to watch where you land so they can keep you up. And I play a Death Knight, so I do a very large chunk of my healing to myself. And it's one of the reasons why DKs are pretty powerful in WoW. And so... We got him down to 500,000, tried a couple of times, and we're just like, yeah, it's too late. We're going to bed. But I was super, super, super pleased with the progress. So I'm hoping by next week we can take out Heroic Archimon and start farming that. And then I think I will probably just move on to something else as far as like, you know, what we're trying to do. Because we're not going to – the only level that's higher than what we're playing at is Mythic, and we don't have 20 people to do Mythic level rating. Mm-hmm. And I don't really want that trouble. Mythic rating is a huge pain in the ass. Like, I have friends that are doing it. I don't know how they're doing it. It looks like they want to, yeah. They're not, it doesn't even look like they're enjoying it. So, so we're just kind of finalizing that and seeing what we can do and just having a good time. And in between that, I've been playing, trying to get through Fire Emblem Awakening. Like still I talked about it before. Yeah, I'm still really enjoying it. It was, I don't know what it was, man, but like I had played it the way I had always played other Fire Emblems. And I think that was part of the problem.
Yep.
Because when I played it the way I played the other Fire Emblem games, I was used to my characters being strong enough that they could kind of just be out there by themselves. And of course, this one doesn't really work that way. I mean, you to the point that like, I feel like you're weak when you're by yourself, but when you're not, I think you're practically overpowered. I've been playing with these characters and, you know, having them kind of sit, you know, just together and kind of cheesing the game, because I know when I get to a certain spot, the enemies will come after me. And so I can use that to my advantage. And so, You know, and to the game's credit, I mean, AI is still pretty good. You know, they go after your healers, they go after the squishy people, but, you know, they roll up on my main character, who's just a friggin' boss, and they either get killed, or after they get their one hit off, then basically my whole army runs a train on their face. Yeah. So
get picked off by your assist or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny, and so, but I really dig it, and I have to say I'm really impressed. With the localization overall, it's really, really enjoyable. And like I ran across this character, when you're like I'm sure a bunch of you guys have played it, but cause I'm very late to the party. Right. I just played that scene where, they try to raid your castle and, there's like a thief with this group that's attacking your castle. And he's like, wait a minute. I didn't come here to kill anybody. I just want to rob people. And yep. You run across him, and he's just like, you know, you have the opportunity. And that was something that threw me off. I didn't realize when I first started playing the game, when there'd be people that'd be standing around, that you could talk to them and convince them to come join you. You know, so and like
if you're not on point with that, you're gonna miss out on some epic party members.
Right, right. And so like, so I got this one guy, and he's just like, you know, he's like, yeah, I'll join your army, I guess. I mean, I guess I could be into that. And then, like, you drop a bag of candy, and he's like, is that sugar? and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm joining the army if you have candy. I'm only going to do it, though, if you have more candy. And just – and it just the – I really appreciate how even though you really just encounter these characters in between fights, I really appreciate the flair that was put into – the way that they were localized and really trying to give them personalities, because unlike, you know, a regular RPG where you get to spend time with the characters and you see all of these interactions, you're really only seeing these interactions with these people if they have a bit of dialogue on the battlefield, or if you're doing, like, you know, the party, basically their version of party chat after the battles. And, you know, that's quick 2-minute conversations. But it's really what I really appreciate is how effective that is, because I really, really like the characters. And that was something really with the other Fire Emblems. I mean, I played the original Fire Emblem. I played Sacred Stones, and then I played the DS version. And, you know, none of the characters really stuck out to me. It was more just about playing, you know, this monstrous game of chess. Is how I would describe a Fire Emblem in the first place, like chess, where you can level up your knights. But I found myself obviously enjoying the battle system, but then also looking forward to the conversations after the fights are over. So that's been kind of a neat thing. And I play that, you know, every other day or something. I'll play, you know, a quick round before I go to bed, and, you know, my wife's already asleep, and it's nice that I know I can be finished with whatever the skirmish is in 15, 20 minutes if I play right, still feel like I've made progress, and then be able to put it down. So I'm going to be chipping away at that. And, my biggest thing right now is I've been going down this RGB rabbit hole, with the Frame Meister and doing old games. And I'll tell you guys all about that once I have some more set up. But, the Super Nintendo's hooked back up, and I've got, like, pretty much all the classics out. And I didn't even realize, like, how – I knew with a lot of these collectible games. I knew with all these older games that there was really, like, a market for them. But I had no idea how like, bloated it had become. If you start looking for games online that are, like, from the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis era, it's kind of crazy how expensive some of this stuff is. Like, I don't think you can get a decent, like, condition copy, and we're just talking about just the cartridge only, of, like, Contra 3 for less than, like, 50 or 60 bucks.
Really?
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, the bigger stuff like Earthbound and Chrono Trigger and everything is still really expensive. And, of course, you know, one of the things that I stumbled upon when I was started, you know, just looking at what was out there, is there's a really big scene now for reproduction cartridges.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is cool, but at the same time, I think is also, I don't know how I feel about it. Because, like, for instance, there is this version of Earthbound going around called Earthbound Uncut. And apparently it restores some of the changes that were made, I guess, to really not have Nintendo get sued. Like the Blues Brothers have basically been put back into it. There's some modifications to the music and some just general references. And what's happening is a bunch of people, you can get a reproduction of that for like $60. So a bunch of people are jumping on that because they're like, well, you know, the original game, I can't get less for like $200, $250 in good condition. So this is what we're doing. And so I started taking a look at what was out there, and it's kind of crazy. There are reproduction cartridges of Seiken Densetsu 3, which was supposed to be Secret of Mana 2 over here, where people have applied translation patches, but they're actually flashing it onto a real cartridge.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that's kind of bananas to me. And I, on one hand, like, I'm like, well, that's, you know, I guess that's cool. But on the other hand, part of me is like, man, this is awesome. But it's more along the lines of like, it's cool that now you can have access to this kind of thing. But I also have an EverDrive for my Super Nintendo, which is, it's basically a cartridge that you stick a micro SD card in. Yeah, an SD card or a micro SD card in. And, you know, it's got a boot menu, and you can run any of the games on there. So technically, even though you have the ROMs on there, you're still running it on original hardware. And it doesn't cover everything. Like, it won't play anything, I don't think, that has Super FX chips or anything else like that. But I would not be so – and I started looking into it because I got EverDrive on a whim, probably like a year and a half ago when I saw somebody selling one really cheap. Because I know the version that I got was from this company called Stone Age Gamer, and they're really, really expensive. And
they're like, they're also one of the only places in the U.S. to legitimately get one, though.
Right, exactly. It's not a cheap Chinese knockoff or anything like that. And, so I was looking into that, and, you know, it was just kind of like, okay, and I don't have an issue with emulation. I know a lot of people do. And I guess it doesn't bother me if you're emulating something and you're still playing original hardware. I would not be surprised now that I'm going on this RGB rabbit hole if, you know, by Christmas time when I actually have a little bit of cash, that's how long it's going to take me to get anything together because of everything else I have going on after we bought my house and everything. I can see myself, they have an EverDrive for the Genesis as well. And I could totally see getting one of those just because, you know, at this point, I still want to really, I don't know, I guess it's just something with me, but there's something that I find right now about regular games, a lot of the stuff coming out right now, that I just find very unappealing. And I don't know if it's, you know, obviously, you know, playing these older games, one of the benefits I have is familiarity, right? Like, I know what I'm in for. But at the same time, there's a lot of stuff that I haven't played. And part of the allure for me is the fact that they're really kind of just getting to the point. And by that, I mean, you know, I can boot something up and I don't have a 10-hour tutorial, you know. And so that's really appeals to me right now because I just don't have a lot of time. Like, one of the reasons Fire Emblem has clicked with me so well is because I can pick up a game and I can finish it in 20 or 30 minutes. The reason WoW works is because I can play WoW once a week with my wife. We can get somewhere. We can, you know, we can do something together. We can enjoy it. And whereas a lot of the stuff, like, I mean, I was looking at my game collection of all the stuff that I've gotten this generation, and I haven't really paid full price for anything. But even then, I'm starting to look at some of this stuff like, this is a colossal waste of money because the chances that I'm actually going to get through and beat this stuff is relatively small. But whereas these shorter games, if we're going back to like the Super Nintendo and Genesis era, you know, I put 5-6 hours into it and I'm done. And that, unless we're talking like RPGs. But even then, I think a lot of the Super Nintendo RPGs didn't have the bloat of what we had today. I mean, you can beat Chrono Trigger in 20, 25 hours. Not to mention it's also, you know, great.
On the subject of repros.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Chrono Trigger, and I have to bring this up. Yeah, out in the repro market, and even as a standalone ROM, it's out there somewhere. You can find a game called Chrono Trigger Crimson Echoes.
Okay.
This is basically really well-done fan fiction in game form. And a lot of it actually succeeds in being reasonably canon because all they did was take they took Chrono Trigger, mm-hmm. the cast from Chrono Trigger, and they made a sequel to it that ties it and Chrono Cross together.
Really?
And so all the conjectures, all the things that would have had to happen to get from one game to the other is chronicled in Crimson Echoes.
That is awesome.
And you can get it on the repro market.
Yeah. And the repro market apparently is very healthy.
Yes.
You know, looking out there. But, like, that's one of those things where I'm kind of like, it's not a gray area to me in the sense that it bothers me that the stuff is out there. I mean, Nintendo's not making this stuff. They're not going to make any money off of it. So whatever. Those people should just do it, you know. I think, and for me, a big part of gaming, too, is the tactile experience. If I just wanted to play any of this stuff sort of half-heartedly, I would just do emulation. But there is something I really enjoy about using original hardware, you know, having the original controllers and stuff like that. That makes a difference to me. And even, you know, like, I don't know if you guys have been following some of this stuff. There's a system out there that's I cannot remember the name of it for the life of me, but it's $500 and it only plays Famicom and NES games, like something.
Yeah, the analog.
Analog NT, yeah.
Oh, and God, that thing.
It's a great idea because it's actual real hardware in a different case. But like for me, I don't know that that would be, even if I had the $500 to put towards it, which I don't and I wouldn't. Even then, playing NES games on something that doesn't look like an NES would bother me. Like, the only time that stuff really hasn't bothered me is when I did emulators on my PSP. And that's about it. But, like, you know, anything that I have with emulation, because I have flashcards for a couple of things as well, for, you know, systems that are dead. Even then, that doesn't feel quite good enough to me. I like having the original. So seeing the repro market out there, especially for these games that people can't afford $200 for, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. And I think it's really interesting. I'm waiting for one of these companies to get big enough that someone comes after them. Because it all seems to be like homegrown, like Etsy stuff. Mm-hmm. Like if you get on Etsy, you can find reproduction cartridges, yeah, which is true. Weird. But, you know, so yeah, that's what I've been doing. I've been falling down the rabbit hole on old games and just, I can't wait to play some of this stuff with my kid. Hmm. It doesn't get better than Super Mario World, I'm telling y'all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Earthbound.
All right, so public service announcement for you guys. If you guys want Nintendo figures and you don't want to support scummy amiibo scalpers, you might want to look at the World of Nintendo figures.
Yeah, this is something that I encountered just by circumstance at my job. Working at Walmart, I see some of these just show up in our checkout lanes. And, like, before I got ready to talk about this on the show, I thought it began and ended with a bunch of 2-inch figures for $4. And apparently it goes much deeper than that. But the selection seems to be as good, if not better, than what you find with Amiibo. It doesn't have any Amiibo functionality. It won't have an NFC connection with your Wii U or your 3DS. But if you just want figures, it's a really interesting alternative. Yeah. I have an 8-bit Mario and an 8-bit Link. And, it's just, you know, it's nice to be able to buy them just to have them and not have to worry about, like, well, I don't know about if worry about is the right term, but it doesn't get you sucked up into anything.
No, and they're not. They're also going to keep producing these, so it's not like the resale market is going to be huge on them.
Yeah, there are rare ones like the Mario that I have. Apparently, is really hard to come by. It's a limited edition Modern Collar one, basically a smaller version of the 8-bit Modern Collar Amiibo.
Yeah,
but. So I'm not sure what the aftermarket's actually going to be on these, but like just to me
that
personally,
by the way, is probably the coolest amiibo too. If the figure's anything like it, the 8-bit Mario, that and Ryu are the best ones by far.
To me, it's just a feature that, for me personally, that it isn't amiibo.
Yeah.
So. But at the same time, I'm actually surprised they haven't done this 8-bit Link in amiibo form.
Alright. So, good news.
Yes.
Metroid Prime Federation Forces coming out in August.
Yay! Said
oh,
no one.
Front this day, Kalu Kale.
Jesus.
That's a Jabberwocky reference.
You
just blew the bit. Oh, well.
I don't know, man. Nintendo, I think, has lost their damn mind. And what's ironic for me about this whole thing is that, especially where I am in terms of gaming right now, what I really want is Nintendo. Like, just give me, like, the substance, not any real fat. You know, give me that. And then, you know, this game is something that no one wanted. And then you look at, like, what they're doing with Star Fox, and it's just like, okay, I'm just... Why do you do this?
It had to be absolutely surreal to be on the design team, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel so bad for those people.
This is a game that had petitions out there begging them to stop making it.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of ways, I mean, this is sort of with Metroid and then to also link in Star Fox. I mean, this is really just Nintendo. This is sort of Nintendo's issue in a nutshell, is that they're acting like they're not competing. And I almost feel like in a way that they sort of have a Sony mentality of, trust us, we'll make this work and you'll like it. But they've already poisoned the well. Like when you look at like what happened with Star Fox, people were like, no one wants these motion controls.
Yeah.
No one. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of rejiggered them, but they didn't do enough. And then you look at this Metroid thing, like people, especially with Metroid, people have been waiting for a proper Metroid that wasn't that abortion that Other M was for a very long time. And then Nintendo's like, you know what we're going to do? Arcadey cutesy shit. We think that's good. Yeah, let's do that. Because, I mean, never mind that the original game was all about isolation and everyone after it has been like that too. I think what this really needs is multiplayer.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous. It's like, where are you getting your ideas and who's telling you that this is okay? They're just
someone's trolling, obviously.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what would have been cool? New Super Metroid.
Yeah.
They should have done that somewhere in the middle of each of those games that they did on for the Super Mario Brothers series.
Yeah. But nope. That's not what we're getting. Anyways.
All of this really just feels like a mad dash to fill the calendar before the NX to me.
Yeah, it kind of does. Although you know, the 3DS doesn't really need it.
No.
But the thing is, if everything is going along the way that we've talked about, like with the NX also being a portable platform, Nintendo has never released a portable console that wasn't backwards compatible with the one previous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, but they kind of have to break that if they're going to get away from the dual screen thing. They're going to get back to like the more tablet phone esque one screen thing for that controller. They kind of have
NX, to. I still feel like the NX is going to have two screens. I feel like the handheld is going to be the second screen.
They could maybe do it that where it's, I guess, like how the Wii U does the DS stuff.
And I'm just thinking that the entire reason that they're finally selling Wii U gamepads as a standalone in Japan is to prepare for the NX being backward compatible.
Yeah. It would not surprise me with the NX if you could plop another gamepad and attach it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Things cost enough, they kind of have to try to make it spread out if they can.
Right.
By the way, Lee, check your phone.
Okay. Is it something about Nintendo sucking right now?
No, it's actually something about
the cool, awesome. Yeah, I see it.
Yeah.
Are those made of wax or like rubber?
No, they're plastic.
It is plastic? Okay. All
right. So
yeah, $4 a piece.
Got Sega. Some news from Sega Europe. We all know that they have a bunch of Genesis games on Steam already.
Thousands.
Yeah. It's like there's about 50 of them on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're tripping them.
Yeah. So Sega Europe is going to be releasing a Mega Drive / Genesis game hub, which basically amounts to a 3D kind of bedroom environment where you can have all the basically access to all the stuff in one place. Looks kind of cool. Will be available for free, so if you own any of those Genesis games, you'll just get this.
And I have a bunch of them.
Yeah, I think I have a whole pack somehow. I don't know how I ended up with
I think I own all of them from like a Sega Sonic collection or something like that on Amazon.
Yeah, so I got that. What's really interesting, though, is it's going to have mod support, and I have no idea how this is going to work.
Me neither.
How do you... It's like, so are they going to basically sanction ROM hacks on
I think that's Steam? What it was.
Because...
If that's the case, then we give them props for being the first platform holder to learn not to give a crap.
Yeah. It could be that, or it could just be items for the room. We don't know. So, yeah. Either way, it comes out to the 28th? Yeah, that's, no, 25th, tomorrow. So I'll just download that, and we'll see how that goes. Because, hey, hopefully this also includes an update to the emulator that kind of makes it suck less. Because that was kind of a problem with the Steam version's emulation sound-wise was not exactly accurate. Which is a shame, because there's actually some really good PC emulators that they could have based it on, but didn't.
Nope.
So yeah, good stuff coming, hopefully, tomorrow. Also coming tomorrow is the John Romero and Adrian Carmack announcement that we talked briefly about on Let's Weekend. But yeah, we'll
wait for that. Because they just could not hold off, you know, they just couldn't, you know, schedule it a day earlier.
Yeah, jeez. It's like, didn't they get our memo? I mean, jeez. All right. So we got Persona 5 news, you guys.
Yay! Yep.
Announcement coming May 5th.
Yay. Meanwhile, their site got hacked and got a fake
release. Bogus launch date. That was resolved fairly quickly. Apparently, they actually used one of their game titles as their password.
Don't do that, guys. Oh my god.
They're putting like, oh, it's going to come to PC and PS4, PS4, PS3, and PS2. All weird stuff.
PS2.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking, wouldn't it be poetic justice if, when they make this announcement, the launch date for Persona 5 was September 30th?
You know, if there's one game that actually probably could compete with Final Fantasy 15, it probably would be Persona.
Well, it's not just that. It's that Square Enix put out that stupid poll a few months ago asking, basically, the implications seemed to be that they were trying to duck Persona 5. Like, if both games came out at the same time, which one would you play first? I don't know. I think this would just be a more than fair and certainly more than amusing response by Atlas to just tie that whole situation in a knot and hand it back to them.
Yeah, we got another story coming up about another date that Square Enix probably doesn't want them to release near for another RPG.
So another Atlas news. It looks like they're taking over localization duties for #FE, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yeah.
That seems like a smart move on Nintendo's part to get the other companies involved in that game.
Yeah.
Since that's more of an Atlas game than a Nintendo game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been the controversies surrounding Nintendo and their localizations of late. Regardless of your position on it, it has been controversial, and it's nice to see them sort of ceding those duties to a studio that's really been more more along the lines of purists over the years.
I look at it a different way. I think they don't want to deal with it. I don't think they will. I think especially with what happened with Alice and Rap, they're like, now they have someone else that they can blame it on.
Yeah,
I know that's a really cynical way to look at things, but like with what they did to her, that opens the door to so many other trolls, and they might. I feel like this is them outsourcing the problem. Like, well, you can't blame us. It's Atlas.
Yeah.
I think it's more that this game probably doesn't have very high prospects for sales, so that getting it to Atlas is at least they're going to be able to tap into their market more than they would otherwise.
Which is sad, because it has a lot of potential to be really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's definitely something that's very niche, so yeah, that's kind of what Atlas does.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we came in expecting this weird Fire Emblem Shin Megami Tensei crossover. Just this weird other thing that came out of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's more or less Persona with Fire Emblem characters as the Personas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that makes sense. Because video games.
Mm-hmm.
Because Japan.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, look forward to that. Another thing we're all looking forward to is I Am Setsuna.
Yes.
Probably one of the only Square Enix RPGs to come out this year that I'll actually be able to play, because it's coming out on a platform I can use.
Yep.
So, yeah, and it's coming out July 19th, which...
3 months' time.
3 months' time, and that's a pretty quick turnaround for them.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised when you
when you put a team to work on a genre that... that the studio in general has been one of the most prolific in the history of gaming with, it's really easy to kind of churn these out and get localization done and have everything wrapped up reasonably quickly. So I'm not really surprised about this. I just want to get my hands on this game and hopefully find out maybe at E3 what's coming next from these guys, because as far as I'm concerned, this is the game that Square Enix should really be rallying around and trying to rebuild its image around rather than Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I could certainly agree with that. Cause...
Especially if the JRPG genre, and it's not, but if it were in the state of... existential danger that Tabata and his team like to pretend that it is.
Yeah.
And this is the game that's going to fix it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, for me, I'm definitely looking forward to it. I hope it has a Vita version. I know there's been talks of that. For me, the Vita version is really just interesting to me because of how I play games now. And just the ability to like stop what I'm doing and have it resume later is huge for me.
Yep.
So that's kind of my thing. But what's interesting to me is that I almost feel like in a lot of ways this sort of shows the duality issue that Square has, because this is obviously a game that people really want, right? And then you turn around and you look at what they're doing with Final Fantasy, you look at what they're doing with Kingdom Hearts. Like, this is a company that's just all over the place. So hopefully, you know, this will be the kind of thing that really kind of gets them back on track. But
wouldn't that be great?
What's that?
I said, wouldn't that be great?
It would be great. But I think it's the same thing as in, like, I don't even think they truly understand what their advantages are. I think there's probably a small group of people in the company that goes, this is the kind of game we need to be making. And thankfully, they've been allowed to make them, you know. But when you have, like, this juggernaut, like... you know, like Final Fantasy, they're just going to plow straight ahead. But like, then I turn around and I look at like what they're doing with Dragon Quest XI. Like, to me, with the way that the console market is doing in Japan, the fact that they have Dragon Quest XI coming out on the PS4 to me screams that that's really for the US. When you look at the amount of units sold, you know, from here compared to Japan, it pretty much screams that like 11 on the PS4 is for us. So that to me says that, you know, Square, there's at least some people there that know, okay, this is the kind of stuff we need to do. And it's just unfortunate that on Final Fantasy, those people don't seem to be listened to.
Yeah.
It does help that the Final Fantasy 15 project under its various incarnations has slurped up such an ungodly amount of the company's money that they...
Yeah. I mean, maybe not quite as much money as the Spirits Within, but...
It's got to be getting there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, however, as far as Final Fantasy XV is concerned, I don't know if y'all noticed, but the recent issue of Game Informer came out, and
they're sitting behind me right now.
Yeah, and their particular issue's main article is on Final Fantasy XV.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read it?
Not yet. I've been meaning to.
You really should, because it's actually pretty eye-opening. They go into all the stuff about, you know, it's troubled production and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But they do reveal some things that I actually find pretty interesting. Like the whole art direction that they're going for, especially when the creatures are concerned. Because one of the things Tabata said is that he wanted to create, he said to the art team, he said, I want you to imagine something, if you could see a Final Fantasy monster on National Geographic.
Huh.
Oh, I can see that going terribly wrong.
Yeah. You got to look at it, though. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Here is a Malboro in its natural habitat. Here are these dumbass humans who are going up to poke it with swords. Let's watch.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing about Final Fantasy XV that bothers me is that it's obviously a concept in general, no matter how many permutations it's been through and everything else like that. It strikes me as something that really should have been scrapped. I mean, for all we know, I mean, half the ideas that could be baked into this could be 10-year-old ideas that aren't going to work in this day and age. And I think I feel like one of the big challenges with game design now, or when you're trying to make something so big and how technical everything is today, like I feel like a lot of times somebody's really not playing all of these parts of these games together to make sure that they mesh. Like that's one of the big problems that's happened with Assassin's Creed, is that you have all of these different things sort of ingrained into one another. But they don't mesh well. Like you have or not ingrained in one another. You have all of these things ingrained into the game, but those various, you know, different systems and things like that may not mesh to make something cohesive. And that's one of the things that I found that kind of pulled me out of playing a lot of newer RPGs is you'll go through a section that's a lot of fun, and it was obviously somebody put a lot of work into it, but then you might get to a section where somebody else did not do the same thing, or it's kind of a slog. And so, like, pacing can be thrown off. And with as many hands are in the pot on Final Fantasy XV, it's hard for me not to think that it's going to be a train wreck. Simply because I wonder if anybody is truly sitting outside of it and going, so how does all this stuff actually work together?
Yeah, that's the point, I brought up a while back. It's like we haven't seen the cohesive whole or if the thing is going to even gel once it's all together, you know?
That being said, that is one thing about this game that I am a lot more optimistic about. I will give it this much benefit of the doubt. They could have taken this game and put literally any other name, well, not literally any other name, but just about any other name besides Final Fantasy XV, and they would have their big new IP that would be ready to take the action genre by storm.
Right.
You know, the fact of the matter is they're just undercutting this game out of the gate by calling it Final Fantasy XV, and I understand why they're doing it, because they do seem to be under the impression that the name might be stronger than the title they're building.
Yeah.
But with the effort that's going into this, and Tabata is not a bad game developer.
No.
If they had just taken that step and shown a little more faith in themselves, then I think, honestly, they would have a real winner on their hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible. Yeah. But, you know, I think, you know, to your point, Pat, I mean, if they had called it something else, I don't think anyone would be as hard on it as they have been. But it's they're coming from, you know, really the last I think we could realistically say the last three games have in numerous different ways, have been really kind of disasters for them. 12 put a lot of people off. I liked 12, but at the same time, like, it was showing kind of how they were going with the idea of MMO stuff. And 12 to me plays like a single player MMO. Still fun, but it's not the game that I was looking for. And then 13 came out, and 13 was not even really much of a game. And so they did that. And then now, you know, 14 launched, where they were just with just the massive amount of hubris that only Square could have. And you know, they had to basically relaunch that. And so, I mean, they're really kind of, if you look at it realistically, they're coming off of a set of pretty high profile losses, so to speak.
Yeah, they've got black eyes.
Right, yeah, and they really need this to work, and I don't know if it's going to.
Also, forgot to mention, you know, Final Fantasy 15, they're creating sort of a whole universe that's going with it.
That's the other problem. That's why this feels like it's 13 all over again to me. Like, you don't need to worry about the movie you're making with Donald Sutherland or you know, anybody like that, like they did with The Spirits Within. Like, make the fucking game.
Yeah.
And make it great. And from that, everything else can branch. But if you are, I mean, they're sort of like doing like a Marvel Universe type thing where they're like, this is going to be so huge, so we have to pack in everything so everything else makes sense. And I just feel like that's just the wrong way to go.
Oh, man. Imagine if they end up pissing away tens of millions of dollars on movies and TV shows of a game that sucks.
That's what I'm saying. And that's the thing. They shouldn't be building into this going, okay, this is going to be just this incredible thing, because I feel like that's not just counting your chickens before they're hatched. That's counting your chickens before you own a fucking farm.
Yeah.
Like, and I just, that's one of those things that baffles me. Like, when you build something like this, an entertainment property or anything else like that, when you look at them historically, the ones that do the best are the ones that evolve organically. Planning for this to be a massive thing when you haven't had a massive thing in the last 10 years is really stupid. If they were going to plan anything around like a property, the one that would make the most sense would be Kingdom Hearts, because of Disney. Because Disney is universal in so many ways. Like, my kid has really never played very many Square RPGs. He's played Chrono Trigger. But I guarantee you, if I sat him in front of Kingdom Hearts, he's going to be like, that's Captain Jack. Or, you know, like, this is Tron. This is, and so that would be his way in. He doesn't care about Squall. He doesn't care about Ignis. He sure as shit doesn't care about Lightning. You know, and all of that is coming because Disney is actually good at maintaining their brand. Square is not. Yeah. So turning around and going, hey, guys, we're going to build like three movies and TV shows and doing this out of this world, to me, just screams like, we want this to be more than it actually is. And we're going to force it to be more than it actually is, rather than have it be something organic. Like, all of the stuff from Final Fantasy VII, I feel like, sort of evolved because of how popular Final Fantasy VII was. Now, whether it was good or bad is debatable, obviously. But Square didn't design Final Fantasy VII to make a TV show and a movie off of it. They designed it to be a video game.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they can't maintain focus on that. Like I said, it would make sense if you're doing it with something that you have properties that are really worldwide and really are recognizable by everybody. If you're gonna make a TV show or like a CGI movie and do it out of Kingdom Hearts with Disney characters, that's a great idea. Doing it off of basically at this point an unproven version of a game that you really haven't had a successful version of for over 10 years is really dumb.
Yeah.
And you know why they would never do the Kingdom Hearts one, right?
Because they're Japanese.
Because anything they do that's Kingdom Hearts, Disney automatically, we own it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Square Enix, you know, they want this to be their victory, and they want to own it front to back.
Well, and I mean, realistically, I mean, you do have stuff like that in the gaming space that has worked. I mean, Mass Effect came out of KOTOR. Because they were like, we want to make something out of this. We want to have our own world. We want to own this. And They also, I think, Mass Effect was grown organically. I mean, when you look at all of the stuff that came out of it, but it also came from the fact that they had a really strong foundation. Like, I mean, one of the coolest parts about Mass Effect wasn't even in the damn, wasn't like actually gameplay. It was just opening up that codex and reading everything that they had thought about.
Yeah.
With the way that they developed the world. And, you know, Square tried that trick with 13, and it just fell flat because half the storytelling was done through things that weren't that were you reading, like Resident Evil style. And that doesn't – people don't play RPGs because they have an aversion to reading, but they also want to see that stuff come out. It's about show, not tell. And 13 did so much with telling rather than showing, and that was another huge problem with it. And, you know, one of the things that's become one of my pet peeves with anything that I do, whether it's gaming, books, movies, or whatever, is if you aren't telling the complete story with what I'm actually getting into. So if it's a movie, and in order for me to enjoy it, I have to read five books beforehand and play the iOS app and everything else like that, I don't even want to deal with it anymore.
Yeah. I agree.
And so that's something else that I could really see happening with 13, like almost kind of like the editor's bubble in comics. Well, if you want to see what happened here, pick up issue 252. Like, I don't want that with my games.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. So, from games that we have a lot of concerns about to a developer who we don't have concerns about because they've been consistently making
excellent.
Yeah. Two very great games under the belt, Supergiant. They just announced their newest title. Goes by the name of Pyre. Looks pretty damn awesome.
Yep.
Gotta say.
Yeah, so it's going to be a party-based RPG. So you're like assembling this little crew that, I guess, travels around to go to these like competitions, essentially, to fight against other teams.
Yeah, it's like a dance-off.
Yeah.
Hopefully we get to save the dance studio.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, dear.
And they've been showing it off.
I got that reference.
Yeah.
And they've been showing it off at PAX East this weekend, so already getting it out there.
Yeah. I mean, I hope it's really successful. I mean, I've liked everything they've done so far. I felt like Transistor was a little more ambiguous than I would have liked, but it's still a lot of fun to play. It's absolutely beautiful. The music is nothing short of stunning. So, yeah, I'll pretty much buy anything that they put out.
Yeah.
Ditto.
They're hoping to get it out 2017, so not too much longer.
Yeah.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. So, not a lot to say there. Can't wait. So from really good games we're looking forward to an absolutely awful console port.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
What happened?
What didn't happen? Basically, the console port is just...
It's like Arkham Knight in reverse.
Yeah.
Ugh.
From a game really cool and really fun on PC to a complete and utter mess on console.
Yeah, so this port was handled by...
Those are words to swing with considerable force, my friend.
Yeah. This port was handled by Maxiom Games, who is a publisher that just recently released Alekhine's Gun, which was... terrible Hitman clone. Runs like crap on the console, so surprise, surprise, their next game has the same problem.
Runs like crap on a console.
And Digital Foundry named this their worst performing game they've ever tested.
That's awesome.
So there's videos out there of somebody trying out the game, and it's only like a 4-minute video, but they show like 2.5 minutes of that is loading screen.
Yeah.
Like a loading screen.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a common thing throughout the game, but at least this one part is a 2.5 minute loading screen on consoles with 8 gigabit RAM. Eight gigs of RAM.
That's so, not okay.
Nope.
That's PS4 version, Xbox One, even worse. There's no V-Sync. So there's constant screen tearing. If you look at the article that it's in the link, the Xbox One version is much, much darker. They show the same scene in PS4, and then on Xbox One, it looks like it's nighttime instead of daytime. Yeah. It's almost as dark as the background on the subtitles.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's almost as dark as Final Fantasy Future.
Oh!
Yeah, I went there. Sorry.
So yeah, the Xbox One version is the first CryEngine 3 game to run at 1080p on the console. They sacrificed a ton to get it to that, I guess.
Well, basically, if it's got a frame rate of 10, I don't think that's really classifies as running.
It's a thing. It exists.
Staggering, stumbling.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you want to play Lichdom Battle Mage, get the PC version.
Yeah.
Yeah, they say they're working on a patch, though. It should have fixed this a long time ago.
Yeah, you maybe want to make sure your game works before you launch it. Just, you know, that'd be a concept that more developers should embrace, I think.
And pick your studios that are porting your games to their platforms wisely.
Yeah.
Do lots of research.
Yeah.
So we end up with less games like Ask this Cat and more Ball. Like Axiom Verge and other games that run well.
Yeah. So, yeah, Rocket League. Hoops coming out this week, looks like.
Yeah, so they got a big update coming out on Tuesday that adds this new basketball playlist mode. Where essentially on each side you have this weird little like volcano for the hoop, and you try and knock the ball into the hoop. So the ball actually looks like a basketball.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be really awesome, especially for players that are good at aerial stuff.
Yeah.
And they're going to be releasing alongside it an NBA flag pack, so they're getting out there with their licensing efforts.
Yeah.
So they're getting the NBA on board with. $2 pack with flags for all of the teams. And there's a free generic NBA logo flag for everybody else.
Yeah.
And alongside that with the update is some worms and Witcher items that are coming in. The cool worms item is like a topper that looks like you got a worm sticking out of the hood of your car.
Nice. Yeah, Rocket League, they've just been killing it with just consistently good updates.
Yeah, they're right up like top five every month best-selling games on PS4. And every time I look at the store on the Xbox One, it looks like it's the top-selling game.
Yeah.
Which says a lot for how good that game is. That
yeah, it's selling
it's
well.
Still selling it's, that well months later.
Well, it's universal. I mean, it's basically whatever, you know, Rocket League is soccer with cars. Yeah. I mean, and it's fun. It even if you're losing, it can still be fun. Like, and that's something else. The pick up and play nature is really good. It doesn't require you to be super technical or anything else like that. And there's just enough leeway that a lot of things feel chaotic, but also like chaotic in that fun way. It's not like super controlled like a sports sim. You know, it's very, I mean, really the term is it's really arcadey. This is something we would have played at the arcades.
Yeah.
And it shows like it harkens back to, you know, kind of that funness and that the kind of wink and nod that you would get with stuff like NBA Jam.
This is totally something I could expect, you know, having played in the bowling alley, you know, back when I was a kid, so
yeah,
like having like a 4-player one, and has, even if somebody went nuts and linked two of them, you know, like it's that kind of thing. This is the Daytona USA 8-car link up, so to speak. If we're looking at arcadiness to it, so yeah.
Oh wow!
It's somebody needs to do that,
right? Yeah,
that would bring people.
I see. There's a Euro Truck Sim stuff coming too.
Seriously, the Rocket League people should like make a deal with like the people at Dave and Buster's and make a Rocket League arcade cabinets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's they awesome. Would make so much money.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, the other
they're already thing, making so much money.
Well, no, like the other thing too is they're going to be one of those companies that if they can get everything to work right with the cross system play, I mean, they're going to benefit hugely because you know, because the PC stuff is already cross-play, I believe. And then they bring in the Xbox and the PS4 people being able to play against each other. I mean, that's a huge win. And it'll be great if the popularity of that game is one of the things that can kind of force that. Because it is much easier to get into than, say, something like Call of Duty or something like that.
Yeah.
And having the ability to play across different platforms would just be phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see like independent developers able to get licensed things from other games and other studios into their games. I know Rock Band 4 is supposed to be getting Battleborn stuff coming in.
Yeah, coming in next month.
Yeah, I see like Goat Simulator thing. You can get like, a little antenna on your car for this, and I think the Euro Truck Simulator thing is you can also get stuff in Euro Truck Simulator 2, Rocket League stuff in there.
Yeah,
have, like a little car or some thing hanging off the antenna.
Yeah,
it's like ridiculously awesome stuff to see like all this crossover stuff that people can bring in. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice to see
people be less stingy like, about sharing their IPs.
Yeah, because everybody benefits in the end.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. So I put this next one in here. It's looks like the PC version of Doom coming out in like 3 weeks is actually going to be a PC version.
Not a console, not a port from a console.
No, it's going to have all the PC accoutrements. You're going to have ultra widescreen support. You're going to have a whole crap ton of detail settings. Let's see what else. Yeah. An unlocked frame rate, so you're not locked at 30 for reasons nobody would understand on the PC.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Looking forward to that. To me, the fact that this is making the news is kind of sad.
Yeah.
I think PC people have been upset about them saying, oh, we play with the controllers.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing like somehow stop that you from playing with the mouse. Dumbed down the game. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this makes sense because, I mean, you know, this is id that we're talking about, and, you know, PC is their bread and butter.
Yeah, id has never half-assed a PC version. Usually it's either the PC version is either launched before or day of. And, like, with Rage being their last game, the three versions were significantly different as far as performance went and visuals, for that matter. Yeah. So they take their time and do an actual PC version, and I'm looking forward to that, because that will be the version I get. I'm not getting the PS4 version, not when the chance for more extensive modding is on the PC, so... Looking forward to that.
Just snap.
You know what's interesting to me about this generation when you're talking about that stuff is that I would have argued like last generation we had all of these great games that even with mod support came over and were still, I thought, really good on the consoles. This now with just how part of how we're getting nickel and dimed with everything, like to me, on any game that was originally a PC property, it almost, if you want your money to count, it only makes sense to get the PC version. Just because of everything you'll be able to do, and you're not going to get charged for it. I'm right there with you, Phil. If I play Doom, it's going to be on the PC.
Yep. So some sad news now. Looks like Tekken Cross Street Fighter is not in active development anymore.
Yeah, they don't want to use the word canceled, but... In all practical terms.
What is this? This is like that. What was it? Who was it that got divorced? Was it Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow? And they said they were having a collective uncoupling. Like, no, you're it's getting a divorce, divorced. Folks. This is the same thing. This is like, no, you this is canceled. You don't want to call it that, but let's call it what it really is. This is canceled.
Yep. That's what it is. Yeah. Although, you know, if I'm honest with something that Patrick pointed out a while back, is that given Akuma is going to be in Tekken 7,
he is.
Yeah, well, he is. But it kind of wouldn't surprise me to maybe start seeing the character work that they did for the other Street Fighter characters to maybe start showing up as DLC for Tekken 7 later on.
Yeah.
That could work. Yeah. But at the same time, seeing how Akuma turned out in Tekken 7, I really wouldn't care. See, the reason Street Fighter Cross Tekken was compelling is you took all these characters from the Tekken series and you completely just rebuilt them move for move as Street Fighter characters. And that was fantastic. It was interesting. It refreshed the entire roster. It just gave you these brand new versions of characters that we've been playing for years and years. When Akuma showed up in Tekken 7, he was Akuma. He was the same Akuma that we've been playing for 7 years now in Street Fighter 4. And if that's what we had to look forward to from Tekken Cross Street Fighter, especially after seeing how creative Capcom got with the Tekken cast in Street Fighter Cross Tekken, that would have just completely killed my hype entirely. So this is, if that's really what we had to look forward to, I'm not really that sad to see this game go.
Yeah. It canceled, folks. Don't get your hopes up anymore. Yeah, a quick bit of
there's going to be that one guy that's like, I'm holding out hope.
Like
was it Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber? So what are the chances here? Yeah. I'd probably say about one in a million. So you're telling me there's a chance.
So a quick bit of KOF 14 news. No trailer this week. They're going to be doing a live stream tomorrow, which is going to be pretty substantial, apparently.
Yeah,
we'll cover
probably
this.
Some new character announcements in there.
Yeah, we'll cover that in detail next week. Much like the Romero and Carmack announcement, we'll probably be talking about that as well.
Mm-hmm. We've already pretty much got next week's show set.
we might, depending on what else happens this week. Let's see. Street Fighter V, April update. Has this actually dropped yet?
No.
Still got a few days of April left, but the big news is Guile and the Air Force Base stage and the Rage Quit changes are all showing up in this update, which hopefully also means that the Zenny store gets working and stuff. Why am I actually hopeful that that they actually get microtransactions working? That's not right.
Besides, the characters are going to be free until then, so...
Then people are going to complain that they have to go pay at some point.
People will complain about everything, but, I mean, we got enough money to handle that.
No arcade mode, still no cinematic story mode.
Yeah, well, the cinematic story mode was always planned for June, so...
Yeah, that was a summer thing all along.
Yeah. May, we don't have any idea, but... Yeah, it looks like...
They've said that they're looking into making a, if not an arcade, an arcade mode, at least a versus computer mode, so...
Yeah.
You know, I gotta do something, because offline content is kind of slim.
Well, that means they'd have to make an AI first.
Yeah.
Because the AI really story mode isn't exactly...
No, it doesn't really exist.
Or the one in survival, for that matter.
Yeah, it just kind of gets harder as it goes on, but not by much. Yeah.
But at least they're not doing what they did with ST.
Yeah. It was like crank the difficulty up from... they start at easy, which is impossible, to all the way up to ultra hard, which is... Yeah, you may as well just commit suicide now.
You have to be one with the machine to beat that.
Yeah. I think it's based on some of the Osaka players. So.
Yeah. Oh dear.
There's a running theory that I don't think it's ever been debunked, that if you ran a Super Turbo tournament and entered the AI as just another competitor in it, the AI would have just as good a chance of winning the tournament as anybody.
I couldn't believe that.
Anyway.
So we got Call of Duty news for some people who actually care about that. 2016 release, Infinity Ward is saying it may... Well, they're not actually saying, but it may be set in space.
Space.
Yeah.
Space.
Yeah, so
space.
We're going to space.
The last game started off in the International Space Station.
Yeah.
As that blew up, and then I guess now they're going to be doing more sci-fi stuff set in the far future.
Yeah.
So,
well, this is the going Advanced to go after, Warfare series, presumably.
Yeah, I'm sure that's great news for Destiny.
Part of me thinks that this was our sort of a reaction to Titanfall, yeah, to a certain extent.
I don't know. To just, you know, the more I see Call of Duty, the more it's like just going all over the place now. It's...
Yeah, I just think it's weird that we're on the Day Zero update talking about Call of Duty.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that got here, but it's worth a mention. Yeah.
Well,
none of us will ever buy it.
At least they're trying to make it interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just for the record, you know, we try not to, but to be honest, being in games, you know, journalism and commentary, and not talking about Call of Duty is like being a meteorologist and not talking about rain.
Yeah, it's gonna happen.
That
eventually
means you live in San Diego.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, moving from that, we got Microsoft has finally announced that they're ending Xbox 360 production.
Yeah, so this is a big post they put on their Xbox Newswire stuff, and it's called Achievement Unlocked, 10 years, thank you, Xbox 360. And in it, they say that they're going to be, that they have an amazing run. The realities of manufacturing a product over a decade old start creeping up on us. So they're done making
it. Yeah.
So they'll be selling out what stock is left. And what I found interesting is that they don't, like, their whole, we're not going to announce console numbers for Xbox One extends to Xbox 62. Because they don't mention how many they've sold.
Yeah, but once they just dry up, then,
yeah,
you know.
It would be nice, like, their most successful platform. Mm. Seems like Xbox One's not going to come close to matching it.
Yeah, this
has got me wanting to pick one up. Just in case mine finally fails, because I don't like dealing with this market.
Yeah. I'm still running my original Elite. So
I got the original. I got way back many Christmases ago. It was the white model.
Yeah, I still got the white one. I'm sure it's ready to just die on me at any moment.
Well, I mean, it's good now that you can attach the third-party hard drive, which I think will definitely make a difference as far as wear and tear.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things that I've thought about. If I could get one, you know, cheap, new in a box, you know, I'll leave it there, you know, until in a couple of years when mine finally kicks the bucket, and then not have to worry about getting one replaced. Or that's one of the things I've learned having some of these older consoles, and there's always something I want to play somewhere. And with the lack of backwards compatibility for everything, you know, on the bone. And then even just some of the backwards compatibility stuff is just not that good.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Xbox 360, just arcade alone has got an incredible library.
Yes.
And that's not something that I want to lose since, you know, I don't have, since there is no backwards compatibility.
And that's something that they've been emphatic about as well. Back-end support, Xbox Live will continue for the Xbox 360, and I think this is going to be one of the first big experiments in terms of keeping one of these services going long after the system itself goes out of production, because so many people are so invested in content for the Xbox 360, digital content, and if the day ever came that they did pull that support, people would be out a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so,
huge deal, man.
Yeah. I mean, I've lost all of my original Xbox DLC. I can't get any of that back.
But original Xbox DLC compared to...
Yeah, there wasn't much of it.
Original Xbox DLC is not a pimple on the ass of Xbox 360.
Yeah, there's a lot more of that.
Yeah, especially with how many people still use that as like their Netflix box or whatever.
Yeah.
Interesting to see how long they're going to be able to keep all of this stuff going, since you need gold for all those apps.
No, I don't. Not anymore.
Not anymore? They changed that a while ago.
They got rid of that a while ago. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, because that made no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you need to pay us to be able to use apps that everybody else has.
For free. Yeah, because it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, they had a... up until a point, you needed Xbox Live Gold to use Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
Because that made total sense to me. Yeah.
Somebody learned, paying money to use Internet Explorer.
Yeah. You should pay them. Seriously. Anyways. Yeah.
It's like the height of self-punishment.
Yeah. I found this Forbes tweet interesting, though. It's Forbes it tweeted that Sony ended Xbox 360 production.
Oops.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's still up.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's still up, and I'm surprised Microsoft hasn't announced the end of PS3.
It looks like they just deleted it.
Oops.
The amount of time from when I put this on the show notes to now, it's ended.
Yeah, about an hour. Yeah. I'm kind of surprised that Microsoft didn't announce the end of PS3 production. That would have been a good way to troll. Yeah. So, you know, we're not all that surprised. I mean, 10 years is 10 years. Can't keep that thing going forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and despite not really dropping the price that much.
No, the lowest it got was 200.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But 200 will get you, I think, the 250 gig model. So, yeah.
They still sell that weird 4 gigabit model.
Yeah, they still do. That one you can probably pick up for about $100, but
that's sort of the weirdest model that they have.
Yeah, but you could put hard drives in there, so at least you know that's a good way to get in if you really need to.
And so part of that whole problem of some of these have hard drives, some don't.
Yeah. Well, they solved that now, thankfully. Yeah. So Sony's been making the news. Be it intentionally or unintentionally, with the PS4 Neo, as they're codenaming it. Digital Foundry took a look at the documentation that Giant Bomb was presented with and kind of broke down what the specs were. To say that this isn't a significant update would be lying, because, yeah, there's a lot going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, speed bump for the CPU, so getting, you know, 1.6 to 2.1, that's about 25% increase there. Memory bandwidth also about the same percentage-wise, 176 to 218. That's probably just a casualty of using faster memory, so nothing big there. The interesting one, though, is the 2x GPU improvement. To get a GPU of that kind of power into a console of the PS4's form factor and keep the power down, they need a new chip for that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only really one manufacturer doing console chips right now. NVIDIA is not doing it. So AMD's Polaris architecture is likely what they're going to be using here. I'm really intrigued by this because it will.
So
be
this
first...
is going to be like a straight. This is, for lack of a better word, basically a new console.
It is. It will be, you know, backwards compatible. We could say. I mean, it's just, it's basically a PS4 just with beefier hardware. So
yeah,
it's
imagine they're
run.
Using the same OS and just having better stuff under the hood.
Yeah.
You know, if Sony's smart, they're gonna introduce some sort of upgrade system here.
Yeah,
GameStop, Walmart, trade Amazon, PS4 for the newer.
Yeah.
No, they're gonna look to the retailers to do the heavy lifting for them on that, and
they'll jump to do that because it's easy money for them because they can get rid of these low profit, full price consoles and taking these ones on the cheap that they can sell for tons of profit.
See, that's the thing. I don't think the play. I mean, everything I've read. The PlayStation right now costs the PS4 costs like I think $225 to manufacture, so they're making money off of it. So and here's the reality of this as far as business goes, and I wanted to make sure that we discuss this. This is Sony trying to sort of break the console cycle, but they're not doing it for like the reasons that are beneficial to anyone. This is strictly beneficial for Sony. This is the last generation ran out so long, they're trying to get back to the 5 or 6 year console cycle. And that's what this is about. And it's really sort of about extracting money because they know there is a group of people that would have no problem buying a new console every 4 years. And it in a lot of ways, it feels like a new Nintendo 3DS situation to me, because Sony has come out and said, we're not going to have a version of this that doesn't play, like, there's not going to be Neo games. So, and at least for me, I already have my modular hardware. It's called a PC. And so if I want to get into an upgrade cycle, I'm going to do it on my PC. I'm not going to do it on a console. Because like, and this sort of throws out the window all of the improvements that people have been able to get with console gaming. Like when you take a look at the first Uncharted from PlayStation 3, compare that to The Last of Us. I mean, it's night and day.
Yeah.
And that's going to go out the window. And this is Sony trying to create a type of mobile model where they want to convince people that they can go out and you need to get the newest thing, just like they do with phones, like where people upgrade phones every 2 years. Even though for the most part, the upgrades are not that big. You know, it's 2 megapixels here. It's the, you know, this is just a better GPU. And I don't think it's worth it. And I think it's really just strictly for them to make money. And I'm not against anybody trying to make money. But Sony would not be attempting this, I think, if they weren't in the lead. And I think that Microsoft is also, we know Microsoft is doing something similar. But I think this is about those companies wanting to have the console cycle last a similar time frame as the last one, but be able to charge people twice. And what's interesting is I think actually the benefactor to this may be Nintendo, because if the Neo and whatever the Xbox 1.7 or 1/3 or whatever the hell they're going to call it launches right around the same time as the Neo, and then you also have the NX out and they're all of similar power, I think that's going to be a something that's going to have people kind of stop and question. But the core, I think, that is relevant to this, not just as far as Microsoft and Sony wanting to make money. I think the other part of this is that this gets people to continuously buy into the ecosystem. The idea that going forward, like let's say just hypothetically, right, that there's just iterative PS4s and then that eventually becomes the PS5 and then the PS6 and stuff like that. If they maintain backwards compatibility, then nobody's jumping ship because they're keeping everything that they bought into. And I feel like that's the core of behind this, besides obviously trying to make money, more money off of hardware, is locking people into this ecosystem. We see it happen in phones. We've seen it happen with stuff like the Kindle. And now it's sort of coming to video games. And so I think that's what you're going to see people like Microsoft and Sony trying to do is go, well, look, you know, because this generation, you know, they lost their edge. All the backwards compatibility for everything went away. And, you know, Microsoft is trying to put it back. But that is one of the big reasons why people could jump from the Xbox 360 back into the PlayStation pool. And we saw the same thing happen when the PS2 came out and then the Xbox 360 came out. Everybody jumped from the PS2 to the 360, and now they've jumped back to the PS4. So them setting this up to where people are buying iterative hardware just locks them into their ecosystem, because it becomes a value proposition at that point where people are going, well, I'm not losing money because I'm keeping all of my old stuff. So yeah. I think also, that's the angle.
Yeah, but also it makes backwards compatibility a moot point at that point because it's basically just the same hardware just being iterated on.
Right.
So, you know, the games you bought for the original PlayStation 4 are going to work on whatever PS5, PS6 you happen to own in 10 years. That becomes less of an issue for them, and it's easier on the infrastructure side because there's not much more that you have to support. I don't know that this is a sustainable model.
It's not. I don't think it is either. Because do you guys remember all of the thrashing and just teeth gnashing that happened this generation with people complaining that their games that they were getting were being held back because they were being developed with the lowest platform being the previous generation stuff? I mean, I think that was a huge delay in us getting games that took advantage really of what these systems could do. And I think that's why 3 or 4 years into the cycle now, we aren't seeing anything that's just absolutely like jaw-dropping in the way that we did in previous generations. And that's because they have this huge install base on the previous consoles that these guys did not want to lose. And so if they do this now, because what's going to happen when, you know, down the line, let's say on the third, the third iteration, a developer goes, well, you know what? We want to use 16 gigs of RAM, not 8. You know, what happens then? And then you end up in the new Nintendo 3DS situation where it's like, okay, so these games will run on this, but they won't run on this, you know, and then you're just splitting your base artificially.
Yeah. There's also a little bit of an admission that the PS4 was underpowered from the start.
Yeah, they came into this gen wanting to be more fiscally responsible with these consoles. Microsoft and Sony both came in. They made them big upgrades, but not like the PS3 where it was like, well, this thing cost us $900 to make, but we're selling it for $600. Right. So we're losing 50% of our potential profit off just cutting her, you know, nose off to spite her face. And that led to the way that people came in, like, well, this isn't a big upgrade over the PS3, and it's not nearly what we can do with these, you know, $1,500 PCs. And that's because, you know, we're sitting here trying to be more responsible with their consoles, and now this seems like addressing those complaints. People are like, well, these aren't going to last another 10 years, like the way the PS3 and Xbox 360 did. They're trying to at least try to offer a way to get those bumps without necessarily having to start from scratch like we do every single generation.
Yeah, and I'm not so much mad about that, but it's just more about like the implications of this is that I think what's fascinating when we look at this kind of stuff is that nobody's reinventing the wheel here, and they keep acting like they are. I mean, we've seen this type of iterative thing. I mean, the Sega CD was a juiced up Genesis with a CD drive.
Nintendo's been doing this since the Game Boy Color.
Right. But see, Nintendo is also, when they've been doing it in the markets they've been doing it in, they've had those cornered. You know, that's not the case here. There is now, obviously, there is a bit more competition now. And you know, Microsoft is really getting mollywopped in this arena. And I don't think you'd see Sony pulling this if they were losing. And it goes back to, you know, some of the other stuff that we've talked about on this podcast before where, you know, there's a level of arrogance for whoever's winning. Nintendo has definitely done this over the years, but I don't think it's really ever worked for them. I mean, how many people have bought the new 3DS?
I have one.
I have one.
You have one. My 3DS fell apart.
Right. And you and I, we all have those. Why?
Are we the typical consumer? Because that was the best option. Because when I needed to buy a new one, I was like, I'm not going to sit here and spend the same money just to get the same thing I had. There's this better thing.
Right.
Might as well upgrade.
But we're not the typical consumer. I worked retail for a very long time. And a lot of people, look, there's a reason why there's still a 16 gig iPhone. Okay? Even though 16 gig won't hold anything. And that's because of price. Like you see, I guarantee you, when Sony puts out this Neo, the original PS4 is going to be between $250 and $300, and this one's going to be between $400 and $500. And it's basically going to be the difference like we had last gen where they had a PS4 that was $499 and $599? They did the same thing with the Xbox 360. It's like, but this time there's actually going to be more in the box, you know, instead of it just being like, well, this one's black and this one comes with a Wi-Fi adapter and stuff like that. But if people are told there's no real benefit besides some bells and whistles for upgrading, the PS4 is still going to sell. And that's what goes back to the part that I was talking about with money. Sony still makes money off of that console. They'll be making money off of people like that are in the enthusiast media or the enthusiast people like on NeoGAF who have no problem going out and spending another $400 on a console. And so it's a win-win for both of them because they're not going to stop selling regular PS4s because everything's backwards compatible, and they get to get new money from people that already own the system anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And I see them going in the roots of trying to have that sort of tiered system like they had last gen.
Yeah.
And sort of be able to drop the new one, the current PS4, down to like $300, have this new one come in at $400. It will offer, you know, both of these pools of players that they potentially want to get. Have them both covered for a while.
Right, but then again, you run into the issue with it. At that point, you are still splitting the base, and the issue so many people, like we talked about the consoles being underpowered, but so many people have been screaming this generation. I mean, look at the way people have been upset about the Xbox One not being able to do 1080p. I mean, there are people that are literally like, I will not buy anything on that system if it's not 1080p. And that's the group that they're going for. But those people aren't the average consumer. They're just not. And splitting
but there's, like, with the iPhone, you know, there's the iPhone, the 6 Plus or whatever they call it. That's not the average person that's going for that. They're going for slightly different markets when they're offering like the smaller phone. It's the cheaper phone for people that want those stuff. Right, they have the bigger stuff with more things in it.
But that's different though. That's talking about form factor. That this you have or something you have to hold in your hand. The main way that you work with that thing every day is you hold it in your hand. I guarantee you that they're going to be the same size. You know, the controller is not going to be different. So you know, you're not looking at the tactile portion of this because it doesn't apply. But like this, by the same token, the chips inside the 6S and the 6S Plus are the same. They have the same graphics processor. I think the 6 Plus has a better camera, but they do the same thing. They're just getting out to a market that they wanted to get to. And why did Apple do that? It's not because they wanted to make a giant phone. It's because they knew that they could make money. Yeah. And that's what this is about. Sony's going to tap into a group of people that want upgraded hardware because they want the latest thing. And they're going to be able to get money off of that while not cannibalizing their own base. But what that, for me, when I look at it, what that means is that we're going to end up in the same situation that we ended up with when this generation split, is that there's going to be people, there's going to be developers and things like that that are going to want to really take advantage of this power, and they're not going to be able to because all the documentation is saying that they can't just make Neo-only games. And so we're going to end up, even though we have a more powerful console, it still has to essentially be tied to the lesser version of itself. So all you're going to be getting is better lighting and stuff like that. You're not going to get that generational leap that people seem to think is going to happen. And people are going to pay for that. And I don't get that because this is just like swapping out a GPU, essentially. I have a 9980 right now. It runs a lot better than my 690 did, but it's not that different.
Yeah, I think if people are going in, I think if people are going into this thinking they're going to get a generational leap, they're going to be sorely disappointed. But I think for a lot of people that play PS4 games, the hardcore, they notice that, you know, Just Cause 3 runs like crap when you're blowing stuff up, which is the point of the game. And a console that can help those sorts of developers that are pushing these games to limits that are causing those sorts of issues on this current console might have a better chance of getting a better experience on this new thing, and that those people will want that instead of having to just deal with this these worst games that are coming out.
But see, I think the only counterpoint to that I have, and then I think we can move on because I know we've talked a lot about this, is that if those people were so irritated about this, they should have just bought a PC.
Yeah. Yeah.
Depends on their situations. Some people have the money for that, and other people, you know, necessarily don't.
But let's talk about a cumulative, though. If you bought an old PS4 and now you're buying a new one, that's $800.
Yeah, so, but I bought the PS4 3 years ago.
Right.
I've got my money. What I'm saying is,
if we're talking about it from a monetary standpoint, buying two PS4s, you know, because of the bump or whatever, is no different than having a regular PC, spending $400 and getting a new graphics card and some new RAM, and then just moving forward. Because if you look at the specs, the part that's important about this is the CPU bump is negligible. The big part is the GPU.
Yeah.
And so that's where the comparison as far as PC goes. I mean, this is literally like the equivalent of swapping out a graphics card. So and the memories, the memory bandwidth subs. So like I said, I just, you know, if you're going to do this, why not just get a PC? And there are people that buy into the console ecosystem because they don't want to deal with this. So anyway.
Yep. One thing I was, I haven't been following this as closely as other people have because I'm frankly not as interested. But one thing that caught my attention, I think I saw somewhere that there was some kind of mandate for having to run 60 frames per second in Neo mode.
Oh, you can't run worse than the PS4 version, the regular version.
Oh.
So you can't, upgrade the graphics and then somehow it runs 10 frames per second worse.
Yeah.
So it's not a mandatory 60.
No, no, that's for okay. PlayStation VR. It has to be at least 60 to 90.
Okay.
So people don't vomit violently when they try and turn around.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting.
There are already plenty of reasons I'll be projectile vomiting on that, so they don't need to compound it.
Yeah, that'll be Job Simulator when that comes out.
Yeah.
It's the interesting thing about this is that throughout all these leaks, Sony has said nothing. Not one single thing. There's no.
They're probably not going to say
no denials. Seems like they're just going to wait it out. Let the angry people get angry and then tire of that.
They're going to judge based on this. Look at what they did with the used game thing. I mean, Sony is going to take a look at the frenzy that people are whipped into, and they're going to react accordingly. So. That's why I think that's a big. Normally they're not going to comment on this stuff anyway because it is a leak. But not commenting at this point works in their favor because they're getting a whole bunch of information from people for free.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unlike Microsoft, which says weird things. People yell at them. They're like, "Yeah, we didn't really mean it like that. We meant it in this other way." And then they're like, "You didn't say that." Like the whole Xbox 1.5 thing, they start talking about, it and they're like, "Oh, we're not going to do that."
Well, you know,
we probably will.
It's funny talking about like what you shouldn't have said, which goes into our next topic, which is Alex St. John.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. So last week we talked at length about it. We were kind of disturbed and stunned, frankly, by what he said.
Yeah.
Apparently, his daughter was speechless. Too. Yeah. So his daughter responded. She's a Drupal engineer. And she had some interesting things to say, amongst which calling what he said vile, toxic waste. Not getting familial support from her, apparently.
Racist, sexist, ableist.
Yeah.
Basically every word you could think of thrown at him.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, she did bring up some stuff like about white male power and all that stuff. And I do think that's relevant, but I think the core, and obviously I wasn't here for your conversation about that last week, but I think the core problem is this is a person that's already attained what he has. And he's essentially going, you know, screw you, got mine. And that is sort of a systemic issue that we have with corporations right now in America, where there is this lack of basic understanding of the people that are creating the things that you then make money off of. And it's not political or anything else like that. It's literally a lack of understanding. And when you look at what Alex St. John's rants were, that's literally all it was. It's a lie. I mean, this guy did Wild Tangent, for Christ's sake. Like, he's not creating works of art. Okay. You know, so to go that angle is really, to me, that is to take advantage of people that are naive and don't believe that the world, that corporations at the end of the day are out for themselves, for the bottom line and for everything else and for their stockholders and stuff like that. So, he doesn't deserve really any coverage, and it's you know, it's bad when your family comes out and they're like, nope.
It's like she had a comment in there saying, well, you know, since he's using my picture in his presentations, I probably should explain some of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good look for you there, Alex.
And then he went further and confirmed what we all thought, which is, he really is a complete and total douchebag.
Yeah, he explained himself, and then he apologized, and I'm putting air quotes behind that.
Apologized to...
It's not easy to...
People, vampires.
It's weird.
It's not easy to convey quote marks through audio, so we're trying to suggest them very, very heavily.
Yes. But I think the capper, though, was his cat, really.
His cat. Is coming out against him.
Yep.
I was on blog. Somehow his cat typed up a blog post.
I mean, it's really just, this is a guy that's completely out of touch. And like I said, I mean, just this lack of basic, and this is a human issue. The fundamental inability to put yourself in the shoes of someone else and to have to have that kind of connection where you could go, how would I feel if I mean, this guy is sort of the poster child for everything that's wrong with so many things that we have going on.
Oh, it gets much worse. It gets much worse. Those posts he's got that we've got linked to, check out the comment section.
Yeah,
I know, and that's the thing. You have people in there. Like, I think one of the things that he wrote was like, people want to be victims. No one wants to be a victim, you clown.
Yeah,
like, come on. It's like, that's the same kind of thing where, like, I hear people like, you know, I don't want to make any more money because the government will just take it. Yeah, because being poor is awesome. I've been there. I've been on food stamps. I've been on assistance. I have been where I've paid every one of my bills, and I still didn't have enough money to take care of the other things, and I had to make a choice on whether I wanted to eat or whether I wanted to have electricity. It's not fun. And so anybody that has this mentality that the only reason that you're poor or anything else like that is because you're lazy – feeds into this kind of guy's narrative, because that's like, I mean, I work for a software company. Okay. I work for a great software company, but anyone that works in software knows you're not working 40 hours a week, but that doesn't make it right. And that's the part that kills me, is that you can sit here and you can talk about the way everything is. And if you just go work this way, you know, you're going to have to work a lot of hours and stuff like that, but that doesn't make it right.
No,
you know, and these are the same people that are fighting right now. Like, I know there's an overtime bill that is sitting with, I think it's with the Senate, where anybody that works over 40 hours a week, but I think they make less than like $55,000 a year, will then be subject to overtime. And this is happening because of people like this guy who work their employee 80 hours a week when they really should be hiring two people. And By people not speaking out against this kind of thing, that's what enables people like this to suck away at everyone. You can talk about any number of things, but like the part where he talked about creativity, you know what sucks creativity out of people? Burnout.
Working long hours.
Yeah, burnout. Nobody is at their best when they're getting 5 hours of sleep at night and the only thing that they have around them is work. No one is. And it destroys not just those people, it destroys their family. It destroys the way that they live, you know? I mean, like, do you guys remember, I think it was a couple of years ago when Rise was coming out, and they, I don't know why they did this, but they did that campaign, like, across Twitter where they were like, 736 meals delivered and blah, 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 blah. And everybody went nuts on them. And they were like, you know, that was 736 meals these people could have eaten with their families.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is the amount of things that people miss should not be your benchmark for your product, you know? And so it's the same thing. If you're looking at, well, you want to come work for me at Wild Tangent, then you need to work 80 hours a week and create art. Like, fuck you, man. Nothing you're doing is art. Okay. Eco is art. You make shit. So let's just call it what it is. And don't sit here and act like people should sacrifice themselves at the altar of your greatness to make shit for Wild Tangent. Fuck you.
Yeah. You're here to that.
Anyway, now that we got that ugliness out of the way, maybe we can talk about a lighter topic like abortion or an exit strategy for the Middle East.
Yeah.
If you got a couple hours, I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
I think we're good. I think we can end the show on that cheerful note. Like I said earlier in the program, check us out on Facebook. We are at facebook.com/DaveZeroUpdate. We're available to subscribe on all kinds of different networks, including iTunes, TuneIn, and now Google Play. Check us out there. And I am Filippo Dinolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And we'll see you all next week.